Shabbos, Perek Yud, Mishnah Aleph, 10:1. The past few prakim we've been establishing the various requisite amounts to be liable for transferring. Here we see a general principle, which is hamatznia. If a person set aside some materials, any of the materials we list in the previous prakim, and his purpose wasn't for the normal use, in other words, let's say we're talking about food, but he didn't plan on using his sesame seed that he's setting aside for eating, whether he's going to plant those sesame seeds for argument's sake. So he's matzniya them lazera for planting. Or let's say, what each of the case in their own, ladugma, he's setting aside, this is an example, a sample, like say we're talking about dyes, olurafua, he's setting aside this particular object for some medicinal purpose. In all those cases, since the amount that he needs for that particular purpose is less than the amount stated in the previous Mishnayos, and since he was matzniya, as we said back in the seventh parak, if a person before Shabbos sets aside a given amount of something because it's significant to him, so then he has made it significant for him, and that being the case, v'hotziyu v'Shabbos, if he transfers it on Shabbos, he'll be chayav, b'kol shehu, he'll be obligated in any amount, meaning if he set it aside, whatever amount he set it aside in, that'll be the amount at which he'll be liable. Straightforward enough. This is actually repetitive from what we said back in the seventh parak. Now, v'chol adam, as for everybody else, let's say the example I gave of sesame seeds, he set aside 3 sesame seeds because he wanted to plant 3 sesame seeds in his garden. So this guy will be liable, meaning what's the case? Let me speak the case out here. The case is that he set aside these 3 seeds, he put them in his pocket, then he forgot he put them in his pocket, he forgot about everything, just he's back to like a clean slate in his mind. When he walks out with those seeds on Shabbos, he'll be liable. Even though he wasn't going to plant the seeds right now, but since he set them aside before Shabbos and he said they're significant to him, so then even now he's transferring them without any specific thing in mind, he's liable because achshaveh, he considered them significant. As for everybody else, if somebody else puts on that jacket and it has 3 sesame seeds inside of it, and since that's not the grogeris, the dried fig amount, anyone else who transports those 3 seeds will be exempt. Because for them, it's not the requisite amount. And that's what the Mishnah says. V'chol Adam, anybody else who transfers those, let's say, seeds in the example I gave, ein chayav alav, they won't be obligated for achatas, ela kishi'uro, unless they transfer the whole full grogeris amount of sesame seeds or whatever is appropriate for the given thing that's being transferred. Now, even the guy who set aside the 3 sesame seeds, and let's say he even transfer them, let's say he's now on the hook for 1 chatas, he remembers. He says, oops, he makes a mental note after Shabbos, bring a chatas. And let's say then he says, you know what, anyways, the whole thing, I've just changed my mind. I'm not planting the seeds, I'm going to eat these seeds. And then he forgets they're in his pocket, let's say, or whatever. And he ends up transferring those very same seeds. So now he transfers those seeds. Since he now changed his mind and considered them food, even on Shabbos when he changes his mind, so then the standard of liability will drop down to being the regular grogeris as food. Meaning the point is that even if he was machshiv, he did consider them significant in smaller quantities, if he changes his mind and decides they're just for the usual purpose, if they're seeds for eating, let's say, so then now the threshold goes back to being like a regular person and resets. So therefore the Mishnah says chazar, if he went back, meaning he changed his mind about this particular object and their use back to the standard use, let's say eating sesame seeds instead of using them for planting or examples or refu, etc. So then, v'hechniso, if he brings them back inside the house, eino chayev, he won't be obligated for those sesame seeds, ela kishiuro, unless he transports back into his house and does the hachnasa with a full grogeris amount of sesame seeds. Okay, that's the end of the Mishnah. That's straightforward. Just want to make sure one thing is clear. If a person before Shabbos didn't set aside any sesame seeds, so that means for him, sesame seeds, the standard is, like any other food, could grow garris, a dried fig's amount. Now, let's say on Shabbos, the guy gets the twinkle in his eye, he's going to be Mechal Shabbos now because he is, and he wants to plant 3 sesame seeds. So going into Shabbos, sesame seeds, the standard for him was grow garris. But on Shabbos, he decides he's going to plant 3 sesame seeds, and he brings them out from his house into the Rosh Hashanah. So he'll be liable, because there, even on Shabbos, he's achieving his purpose. His purpose was to transfer 3 sesame seeds, and that being significant, a significant, he'll be liable. And this is an important thing I want to make sure is clear. The previous case, and the previous cases in the Mishnah, is where he was transferring sort of without a specific intention in mind. So the original case of the Mishnah here is he originally set aside 3 sesame seeds for planting, so therefore that will be the amount for him. Somebody else who didn't set three sesame seeds aside before Shabbos won't be liable for three sesame seeds, only at a grugeris amount. But if a guy who didn't set it aside before Shabbos, like the second guy, decides he's going to go and now take three sesame seeds on Shabbos and plant them, or two or four, any other number in the world, the point is, since now he's doing something significant, he's being motzi a significant amount of sesame seeds, the very amount he wants to plant in the garden, he'll be liable even if he only had that idea on Shabbos. Again, so the point of our Mishnah in general is stam for a person who didn't on Shabbos intend to do hotza with this particular item, in which case, at all events, like I described a minute ago, it will be based on his attention at that point. Shabbos Perek Yud Mishnah Beis 10:2. We continue the discussion regarding hotza'ah, but now we discuss some very fundamental principles that govern these rules. So you have to remember that the basic premise of hotza'ah, of taking something out, is taking something from a reshus hayachid to a reshus harabim, from what we call a private domain to a public domain. But again, remember, the private and public doesn't mean who owns or has rights to this particular space. The reshus hayachid is defined essentially as any place which is at least 4x4 tefachim, that's hand breadths, think of that as maybe 16 inches, you know, on a side, 50 centimeters on a side, and is offset from the rest of the world by mechitzos, partitions that are 10 tefachim high. 10 tefachim high, roughly waist height, you know, think of it as 90 or so centimeters, just a little more than a yard. So if they have partitions on all four sides, then this reshus hayachid is offset and is a private domain. And the public domain, reshus harabim, is defined as an area that is at least 16 amos wide. Think of it as, say, 8 meters, 25 feet wide, and is open on all sides and has a lot of through traffic. Exactly how much through traffic is wide-ranging machlokas. I think the number everyone seems to know is 600,000 people moving through them every day. It seems the actual halachic basis for that number is not great. But whatever the case may be, we're talking about a lot of foot traffic, of people moving through this open area. That's reshus harabim. Now, anything other than something that meets those one of those two sets of criteria is mida oraisa, simply a makom patur, an exempt area, and the Torah does not forbid taking out to or moving in from one of those exempt areas to either reshus hayachid or reshus harabim. There's no restriction. Mida rabbanan, the rabbi said, areas that resemble a reshus hayachid or reshus harabim will be treated as what's called a karmelis, and that means that it's at least rabbinically restricted. So the karmelis can kind of take one of two guises. It can either look a lot like a reshus harabim, just it lacks the traffic. So that means, for example, an open park. It's more than 16 amos wide. It's open on all sides, but there just isn't that much foot traffic in an open park or a field or a beach, etc. On the other hand, you can have a karmelis which resembles a reshus hayachid. That is, it is 4x4 tefachim or larger. It's a significant area. And it's offset from the public domain, but the thing which offsets it, those mechitzas, are less than 10 tefachim high. So as long as those mechitzas are more than 3 tefachim high, so then the public wouldn't walk, if such a thing, it's called a podium, right, or a bench, if such a thing were in the middle of the freeway, no one would go over it, they'd all go around it. If it's less than 3 tefachim off the ground, it's considered to be lovewood and sort of subordinate to the reshus harabim. People would sort of walk right over it, like a speed bump, they go over it. But if it's more than 3 tefachim high, it's no longer part of the reshus harabim. If it's offset by less than 10 tefachim, it's not a bona fide reshus hayachid, and therefore it's something in the middle. We treat it as a karmelis, and it's, again, the rabbis were concerned people would confuse these areas which technically midoraisa are exempt, as mekomos paturos, exempt areas. They might confuse them as being reshus hayachid or reshus harabim because they look quite similar to them, and people might come to make mistakes later on. Okay, so with that in mind, our Mishnah sets forth two really fundamental ideas. The first is, what happens if you're transferring from reshus hayachid, but you have two reshus harabim, that'd be hotza, but you have a karmelis in the middle? So the Mishnah says, hamotzi ochlin unasan al ha'iskupa. If you're taking foodstuffs out of your house, but you put them first on the eskupa. I'll translate eskupa as the stoop in front of your house. Think of like a, you know, house in Brooklyn or something. The essential point here is that this eskupa is now on the outside of your house, no longer really reshus hayachid, But it is ikarmelus, meaning it's more than 3 tefachim off the ground and less than 10 tefachim offset from the Rishus HaRabim. And therefore, it's neither Rishus HaYachid, it hasn't got the 10 tefachim, nor Rishus HaRabim, because it's more than 3 tefachim, so it's an area all to itself. So by putting your foodstuffs from inside your house onto the iskupa, which is a karmelus, you've done Isser Durabanan, but not more than that. What happens then, if someone then transfers from the iskupa either in or out the house? Again, it's only a violation of Durabanan, and you won't be liable. Remember, essentially, the essential point, that every act of hotza'a, of a transference, whatever guise it may take, a hotza'a, a chnasa, a hoshata, a zrika, all those things, however you're transferring this object, it must be include a akira, setting the thing into motion, and a hanacha, the thing coming to rest, in another domain, in order for one to be liable. So, that being the case, since you broke up the transference in two steps, and each step didn't have an akira in one domain and a hanacha in a different forbidden domain, like from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah, you'll be exempt. And that's what the Mishnah says here, Hamotzi Achlinu and the son ala skupa, if you're transferring the food from out of your house, and you put them on the skupa, on the stoop, which is a karmelus, therefore you'll end an Isra Durabanan, Bein Shechazer V'Hotzian, it doesn't matter if someone then goes and picks up, or this guy himself goes and picks up those foods and transfers them from the stoop, the skupa, into Rosh Hashanah proper, Bein Shechotzian Acher, if someone else does it, it makes no difference. Pator, whether it's him or someone else, everyone's going to be exempt from culpability, meaning there's no chatas to bring. Mipnei shlo asa malachta b'vasachas, because the proper malach votsa, meaning an akir in one domain like Rosh Hashanah and a hanacha in a different domain, meaning the Rosh Hashanah, didn't happen here. It was broken up into two parts. Fine. Now, the second part of the Mishnah here is going to develop this idea a little further. It's going to be talking about a place called an iskupa hachitzona, the outer stoop or step of the stoop. The point of this part of the Mishnah is that this iskupa is within 3 tefachim of the ground. And that being the case, it really is part of the Rosh Hashanah. People just walk right on the step or over the step. So transferring from your house onto this iskupa hachitzona would actually be the proper malacha d'oraisa of hotza, taken from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah. The question is, what happens if it's the thing you're moving outside your house is a basket, let's say, or a box, and the basket or box is only halfway out your house and halfway on the skup hechtona. So it's partially, the object we're talking about has partially been transferred out, but not fully transferred out. And that's going to be our question. And to make things more interesting, we're going to say that this basket or box is full of food. So the Mishnah says, "Kupa shi maleam peros." If you have a basket and it's full of food, peros typically means grains, for the record, but may not mean so in this Mishnah over here. Unasana al haskupa chitzona, and you put the basket on the outer stoop, but it's not fully out of your house. Some of it is still inside your house. Afal pisha rova peros mebuchutz, even though the majority of the produce inside the basket is actually already in the Rosh Hashanah Rabim on the Skupa Chetzona. Since part of the basket is still inside the Rosh Hashanah Yachid zone, the din will be pater. The person that transference will be exempt of culpability for a chatas, etc. Achiyotzi es kola kupa, until he transfers the entire basket out of the house, out of the Rosh Hashanah Yachid and into the Rosh Hashanah Rabim, meaning all the way out onto the Skupa Chetzona till the outer step there. Now, there are two approaches in the Amoraim regarding what this picture looks like. So I'm going to explain this first according to Chizkiah's picture, because the Bar Tanura learns like Chizkiah, and then I'll learn like Rabbi Yochanan, who is how the Rambam and most Rishonim learn, and the Halach will be like that approach, presumably. Okay, so first we start with Chizkiah's picture. Chizkiah's picture is that we're talking about a basket that's full of long vegetables, that think like carrots or, you know, I don't know, long cucumbers or something. So when you put the basket halfway out, so each and every cucumber is only halfway out of the Rosh Hashanah Yachid. No individual cucumber has transferred across entirely to the Rosh Hashanah Rabim on that Eskupa Hechtzona. That being the case, it's only a partial transference, and therefore one's putter. That's how the Bar Tanura learns, like Chizkiah. Meaning that if you transfer a whole if the whole basket hadn't been transferred. But if you, let's say, the basket, instead of being filled with long, skinny vegetables, were filled with, you know, small little mushrooms or something. So then if individual mushrooms had crossed over the threshold, even though the whole basket hadn't, one would be chayav for transferring those mushrooms from the Rishus HaYachid into Rishus HaRab. The other approach, Rabbi Yochanan, is that the container itself is me'aged. It combines its contents to like a single unit. And that being the case, we can be talking about even a basket filled with small units, even tiny kernels of mustard. It doesn't matter. The point is that, which are the smallest kind of produce that Chazal talk about, the seeds of mustard. But anyways, whatever it is, mustard or mushrooms or any other fruit or vegetable, grain, big or small, if it's inside a container, and if half the container left Rishus HaYachid, so even though you have individual items that are entirely now out, those little pieces of and grains of mustard or whatever they are, mushrooms, etc., it doesn't matter. Because Igud Kli, the utensil, combines it to a single unit, since the whole unit hasn't yet left, it's not considered to have done a full malacha of transference from Rishus HaYachid to Rishus HaRab, and therefore you'll be putter, again, as long as the whole container didn't leave the Rishus HaYachid. That's how the Rambam learns, and that's like Rabbi Yochanan and most other Rishonim. So the halacha is actually like that approach, not like the Bartender's approach at all here. Okay. Shabbos Perek Yud Mishnah Gimel 10.3, more on Hotzah and the general principles that govern it. This Mishnah really teaches us one of the rules of Malachas Masheves, the requirement that when one does a malacha, it's done in a normal way, an intelligent way, a productive way, an efficient way. So the point of our mission here will simply be that if you carry something in a weird way, you won't be liable. Here is the mission side. Hamotzi, if one does hotzah, taking an object from inside his Rishus HaYachid to outside. Bein biyamino, it doesn't matter if he's holding it in his right hand, bein besmolo, or his left hand. Betoch cheko, or if he's holding in his chek. I like to translate chek as the folds of his clothing. Sometimes you'll see chek translated as breast, bosom, and sometimes you'll see it translated as lap. For our purposes in the 21st century, think of it as like a breast pocket of your jacket. The point is, that's where you keep stuff. Okay, so wherever it is, that's the way you carry things, and therefore it's normal. Oel katefo, or you transfer it with the thing on your shoulder. Again, a normal way of doing things. In all those cases, chayev, you'll be liable if you do the hotzah in that way. Sheken masa b'nei kahas, because that's the way people transfer things, as is indicated by the b'nei kahas. Kahas were one of the three Levite families who were charged with carrying the various parts of the Mishkan. They carried the most important parts, including the menorah, etc., and they were required to carry them by hand, no using wagons, etc., and then Pasuk actually says they carried them on their shoulders. So this is to hearken back to the point that the parameters of malachas for us are patterned on what happens in the Mishkan, so they had to carry things in the Mishkan, like B'nei Kahat did the carrying, and they carried it in a normal way. In contrast, if one did it in an unusual way, so either this means the Mishnah says, Kala'achar Yado, so if you include the kaf there, Kala'achar Yado means it's an idiom, and it means in a backhanded way, meaning in a weird, unusual way, as maybe you're familiar with the Kilchos Muktzah we discussed before, Kala'achar Yad, doing it in a backhanded, unusual way. Many have the gears of simply La'achar Yado, meaning on the back of his hand. Imagine, you know, carrying a wallet balanced on the back of your hand. That's really weird, of course, and not very efficient and not normal, and therefore if one would carry on the back of his hand or in any abnormal way, including the following list: Baraglo, carrying it on his foot; Befiv, carrying it in his mouth; Bemarpeko, the marpek, according to Rashi, is the armpit; according to Tosos, is the elbow pit, what's technically referred to as the antecubital fossa, if you really want to look it up, but that place between, you know, on the other side of your elbow, where the little place you can hold something there. Ba'azno, in your ear; Ubisaro, in your hair; Bapundaso. Let's let me stop there for a second. So all these things, the idea is that it's not normal to transfer things on your foot or in your mouth or in your armpit or in your ear or in your hair, and therefore it's weird. And that being the case, you're going to be exempt when the Mishnah says in the minute the punchline. Let me speak out for a second that there are certain things that are normal to be carried in these ways. In other words, the way one carries shopping bags is indeed in his elbow pit. and the way that one carries his headphones is in his ear, etc. So if you'd be transferring those things in the normal way, you definitely would be liable. Okay? The Mishnah continues to talk about now the pundaso. So pundas is one of two possible things. The bartender learns it's a money belt. So I think the way to imagine it, at least the way I imagine it, is think of a sash folded in half. So it makes like some little pouch. You could stick stuff inside that pouch and wrap it around and tie it around your body. Super simple. And keep money inside there, etc. The Rambam learns that the pundas is the like a undershirt to collect sweat. Since you only have one garment on the outside, you wear an undershirt to sort of, you can do laundry with an undershirt much easier. Whatever the case is, if, let's just go back to the sash, the money belt sash idea. So the point is, upia lamata, if you have folded your money belt thing upside down, so it opens downwards, well, that's strange thing to do because the money will fall out. And that being the case, if you store your money in the money belt upside down and walk it, carry it that way, that'll be weird. Galachiyat. Bein pundaso l'chaluko. And similarly, if you shove in the money that you're, or whatever it is that you're carrying on Shabbos, between your money belt and your chaluk, a chaluk often translated simply as a shirt, and you can think of it that way if you want. For now, the point is that that's not a normal way to place, carry things between your undershirt and your shirt. It can fall out there, of course, and that's the idea. A chaluk, probably depending on where they lived, looks something like the jalabiya. Think of, you know, how, if you think of how Egyptians or Bedouins or Sudanese people dressed, Yemenite people dress, it's kind of long, looks like a nightgown, you know, so something like that. So again, you have that's what they're wearing, and that's a chaluk, and beneath it, the money belt. So if you stick whatever you're carrying between the two, it's not very stable, not normal, and therefore you'd be putter. Ubisfas chaluko, same goes if you carry it in the hem of your chaluk. So that means, think of this nightgown, jalabiya thing. At the bottom, there's a hem, it turns up. So you could put something inside there and carry it. Again, that would be some kind of silly thing to do because it can fall out easily, but if you do, you'll be putter because it's weird. Bisandalo, if you carry it in your, b'min'alo uvisandalo, if you carry it in your min'al is your shoe, and your sandal is your sandal. They're the same basic thing. A min'al, a shoe, has like a soft leather bottom, like our shoes more, if you will. A sandal essentially has a hard leather bottom that you strap onto your foot, you know, like a sandal. So similar, the point is it's not normal to keep your stuff in your shoes. And then therefore, if you keep something in your shoe or in other things on the list from before and transfer it in that way, you'll be potter, meaning it's like every time it says putter, it's forbidden to do. But you technically have not fulfilled all the criteria for melechs machsheves. It wasn't the normal way of doing things, the efficient way of carrying something. And that being the case, you'll be exempt from machatas shlohotzi kaderech hamotzian, because you didn't transfer this object that you were carrying in the way that normal people do transfer objects. And this principle of carrying things in a normal way, they will carry over, if you'll forgive the expression, to other malachas. Every malacha that's done in an abnormal way will be lacking in the requirements for malachas machsheves, and therefore will be pater of al aser, meaning one may not do it, but if one did do it, he would not be liable for achatas. Shabbos, Perek Yud, Mishnah Dalid, 10:4. More about malachas machsheves. Again, the point is, one of the aspects of malachas machsheves is that when you do the malach, it has to be done in the way that you intended it to be done. And that being the case, Hamiskaven lahotzi lefanav. If a person, let's say, has got his sort of man bag, you know, it's like a satchel, and when he puts it on over his shoulder, he expects the bag to be in front of him the whole time, and that way he can keep an eye on things and have pickpockets stealing from behind him. But uvolo l'achrab. But while he's transferring it on Shabbos, it ends up going behind him, so the bag is not open to the back, and therefore he can't keep as good an eye on it. It's less a poorer shmira, less ability to guard it. So that's not what he intended. And that being the case, putter, he'll be exempt. Since the way in which he took it out was not the way he intended, it was in a way that didn't facilitate the level of guardianship that he had intended originally, he'll be exempt. However, la'achrav, if when he put on his little man sack, he put it on and he knew full well that it was open to the back, he wore it on his, like, behind him, and he didn't care, he figured that's safe enough. And then, uvolo lefanav, but as he's walking the bag rotates around and ends up being in front of him, that would allow him to do even a better shmira, guardianship, over the bag. So then chayiv, he'll be liable because he was already willing to transfer it with the bag on his back. So the fact that it rotates to his front doesn't make it any worse. He still did everything he wanted to do, including having being able to guard the bag at the level of, you know, equivalent of behind him or better. And therefore, chayev, he'll be liable for achatas. Be'emes amro, the truth is, and when the Gemara says be'emes amro, what it means is this is a din that is as if it were halach l'mosh mi-Sinai, meaning it's a tradition we have which is incontrovertible and no one's allowed to argue with it, no one's able to argue with it, it's just hard and fast, cut and dry. That ha'isha ha'chogeres b'sinar, if a woman is wearing, I'm not perfectly sure what the sinar is, but think of it as a slip, which it seems what the Baruch Hu has explained, it's like a slip under her skirt. The point is that slip can go, it like rotates around her waist in a circle, so there's no real front or back. And when you put on the slip, and let's say you're going to attach something to it, like that's where you attach the thing you're trying to transport, so that was a normal thing to do perhaps, but you have to know full well that as you walk, as a woman wearing the slip, it could rotate around. So what starts on the front could just for sure go to the back. There's no real front and back to this sinar. That being the case, bein milfaneh uvein l'achareh, it doesn't matter if she originally intended for this thing she's transporting to be attached to the slip in the front or behind, it doesn't make a difference. Because even if it rotates around, she knew that was going to happen. She can royally os choser. She knew full well that the slip rotates around the waist, and therefore, even if she put it, started out in the front, she knew full well it could end up in the back, and therefore, she didn't demand that high level of guardianship ability, and therefore, she'll be liable regardless of whether it rotates front or back, unlike the first case of the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Omer af mekable pitchen. Rabbi Yehuda wants to make a new sheet, then argue, and say that there's a middle case. The middle case is something which does sometimes turn around, but not usually. So the Tanakam would hold, that being the case, what's the case? So the case is, Mekabli Pitzchin are people who a petek is like a note. So these are like the people who are transferring notes on behalf of the government. So like they're runners. So what they do is they get their little, like, you know, whatever it is, their bag or purse or mailman bag that they are transferring, and they're going to take the mailman bag and put the mail inside of it and run to the next town over to deliver the letter. So since they're running, sometimes the bag turns behind them. So Rabbi Yehuda says, since it does sometimes turn behind them as they run, they know full well that's going to happen, and that's enough to already make it be liable, whether it was in the front as they intended or if it rotates to the back, kind of like a sinar. And the Chacham, everyone else says no, since it's normal for them to want it in the front, and normally it stays there, just sometimes it rotates backwards, the sometimes of the rotation is not enough to make it comparable to a sinar, which always invariably rotates around and around and around, and therefore he would be putter if he intended to be in the front carrying his letter and rotate it to the back. And the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda, meaning if it just sometimes turns around, that's not enough to change the rules. The rules of the Tanakam would apply, and therefore the mailman who transfers his bag when he's running, if it rotates behind him on accident, when he comes to rest, he finds it behind him, since he didn't do the transference with the hanacha as he originally intended, he'll be putter. Shabbos Perik Yud Mishnah Hey 10:5. Hamotzi kikar l'rishus harab m'chayev. The person transfers a loaf of bread to the rishus harab, he'll be chayev. That's pashit. The chiddush is hotziu shnayim. If two people carry that bread together, peturim. Since both did the malacha together, they'll both be exempt. The reason for that, exempt from being a korban chatas. The reason for that is because the pasuk which talks about the chiyuv, the obligation to bring a korban chatas, refers to an individual in a number of times. It says, ve'im nefesh achas techta bishkaga. The person does a chet bishkaga and a shogeg, inadvertently buying the malacha, or whatever the isser is in Shabbos, to be chayav b'chatas. Ba'asosa, in doing it, that particular malacha, meaning one person doing it, achas memitzvos Hashem, one of the mitzvahs of Hashem. So the pasuk refers to nefesh, a single person, achas, a single time, ba'asosa, a single doing. And therefore, there are three places to make drashas. One of the drashas here are going to be that it's shnaim sha'asu. If two people do it together, then they'll both be pater from the obligation to bring a chatas. And I see one person who does it by himself. Now, if lo yachol echad lahotzi, if one person by himself is not able to take out this loaf of bread, so then v'hotziyuhu shnaim, and two people do it together, then chayavim, then they'll both be obligated to bring korban chatas. Meaning, according to the Tanakama here, if two people worked in concert and they do something which each person by himself could not do it, so then both will be chayev. That's what the Tanakhama says. Rabbi Shimon Poter, Rabbi Shimon says, no, even then, there's no such thing as two people working together to be chayev, even if it's something that could not be done unless you have two people working together. Rabbi Shimon holds that one of the three times that the pasuk I just read to you refers to a single act of a single person means to exclude even the scenario here. The Tanakhama holds that one of the three drashas that are available for learning out from is teaching something else altogether, unrelated to that topic. I don't want to get into it now. And therefore, you'll be chayev. Okay, in this case over here, the halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon, meaning shnayim she'asu, if two people work in concert to do a malacha, where neither one could do it by himself, but together they could do it, then both will be chayev achatas. Okay, now a new point here. Hamotzi achlin pachos mekashir bekli. If a person transports in a container food, where the amount of food inside the container is not the requisite amount for which one would be chayev for hotzah. So we learned already that for most types of food, back in the seventh parak, the obligation is if you transfer a grogeris, a dried figs amount of food. So if a person did half a grogeris of food, he'd be pater. Now what happens the case of our Mishnah here is, you're transferring this, let's say this half a dried fig or whatever the food is in that quantity, inside a Tupperware container. So if that's the case, even though you're transferring a Tupperware container and half a dried fig, even so, pater. Afalakli, the person who does the transferring will be pater from a korban chatas, even both for the fact that he didn't bring the requisite amount of the food, but also even for the tupperware that the food is inside of. Shehakli tfelelo, because the container is considered to be subordinate, tafel, to the food. That is to say, he's not transferring a container, he's transferring food, and the way he transfers the food is inside the container. So the container is subordinate to it, and therefore if the thing that he's transferring, the food itself, is not of the requisite amount, then he'll be pater. That assumes, of course, that he has no need and no purpose for transferring the Tupperware other than for transferring the food. But if, let's say, a person needed two things, needed half a grogeris of food, and he also wanted a Tupperware to do some other packing of something, so then he'll be chayav, of course, in the Tupperware. The Tupperware is not subordinate to the food if he's transferring both of them in and of themselves for their own purposes. Es a chayav mita. Now, if you have a person, a chai here means a living person, and he's lying on a bed, and someone transfers, or even two people, if it's a two-person job, according to that shita, which is the halacha, transfers the person lying on the bed, patur afalamita. Similarly, the person doing the transfer will be patur both for transferring the human being, for carrying that person, as well as the bed on which he's lying. Here again, the bed is functioning as the Tupperware, and the reason why you're not chai for the person to which the bed is subordinate, is that we have a principle that a chai noses atzmo, that a living person is considered to participate in the transferring of himself. And the reason for that is because when a person is alive, he shifts his weight to assist the person who's carrying him so it can make it easier for him to carry. Certainly anybody who's carried a child up the stairs knows if the kid puts his head close to the shoulder, then it's easy to carry the child up, and the kid leans back, then it becomes very difficult. So the point is that by shifting his weight, the person being carried also participates in carrying himself. And that being the case, it's like we said before in the Mishnah, he is doing part of the carrying. And that being the case, the rule is chai noses atzmo, the person alive is doing part of the carrying when he's being carried. And therefore, the person doing the carrying will be pater because he doesn't do the whole malacha by himself. In contrast, if you would have a person who isn't alive, so then es hames b'mita, if the person in the bed is a corpse, so then chayev, the person doing the carrying, will be liable because the corpse, of course, does not carry itself, and therefore he's transferring something single-handedly, he'll be chayev. V'chein kazayis min hames, the same will be true if you're transferring not a whole corpse, but just even a kazayis, an olive's amount of flesh of a human person, u'kazayis min hanavela, or olive's amount of the carcass of a dead animal, uvachadasha min hasheretz, or if you're transferring even a lentil's amount of the flesh of a dead sheretz. The sheretz here is referring to the shmona shratzim specifically, those eight categories of creepy crawly creatures that convey tumah when they're dead by maga. In all those cases, chayev, the person doing the transfer will be chayev. The point of the mission here is that you're transferring something significant, it's significant in as much as the halacha says that these are the thresholds at which these different types of tumah convey their tumah. Meaning, if you have less than a kazayas of a mace, or less than a kazayas of an avela, or less than a kadasha of sheretz, so then it would not convey tumah, and therefore it's not considered halachically significant. But if it has this amount, it is halachically significant, and therefore you're chayav for transferring. But Rabbi Shimon Poter, Rabbi Shimon says, no, you're not. Rabbi Shimon says, you're still exempt. Now, the reason why, this is a very fundamental machlokas that pervades Masechet Shabbos, and really even beyond Masechet Shabbos, in some ways. But Rabbi Shimon holds that a malacha trinsich legufa, that if a person does a malacha, that he doesn't need the malacha for its own purpose, then he'll be potter. What does that mean? So when you do a malacha, really, this sort of what I would refer as the, you know, a difference, or we can consider both the substance and the form of the malacha. The form of the malacha, in this case here, is hotzah. We are transferring objects from Rosh Hashanah Yachad to Rosh Hashanah Ram. That's called the hotzah, and that's the form of the malacha. And here you're definitely doing that. No denying the fact that you're taking this corpse or piece of a corpse and you're transferring it from Rosh Hashanah Yachad to Rosh Hashanah Ram. So definitely you've ticked the box of doing the form of the malacha. And Rabbi Yehuda says, in the Tanakhama, who's Rabbi Yehuda, says that's sufficient to be chayv. Rabbi Shimon says, if you're not also achieving the substance, the content, the purpose of the malacha, then it'll be pater. So when it comes to hotzah, when one transfers an object, what's he doing? He's seeking to achieve something. Namely, he has an object in domain A, and he wants it into domain B, and therefore he'll do the transference from A to B to achieve the fact of what he wants, of having this object now in domain B. That is not the case in our Mishnah. The Mishnah here is assuming that the person doing the transferring has no need for the dead body in domain B, or the piece of dead animal. What the person doing the transferring is simply he doesn't want this source of tumah in his home. He wants it anywhere but here. He's coming to redress some kind of problem. And therefore, he doesn't actually care to achieve the end of transferring the corpse or the piece of the corpse to domain B. He simply just wants it out of A. And that being the case, he's not achieving the normal use of hotzah, the normal guf, the essence of hotzah, which is to achieve the end of getting something from where it is now to where he wants it to be. He doesn't care where it is. He just wants to remove the problem. And that being the case, says Rabbi Shimon, he'll be pater. Now, as far as the halacha goes, it's a machlokas if malacha shein tzricha gufa is chayev in the Rishonim. Most Rishonim learn that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, that a malacha shein tzricha gufa is already pater. It's usur. Everybody says that. It's forbidden to do. But it's once pata for being a chatas, meaning it's not an isra d'oraisa, it's just a derabanan because it lacks the melech's machshevas angle. The Bar Tanura rules that the halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon, and he goes with the minority of Rishonim. However, I guess Rov Poskim, like I said, the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, and that's important, of course. Lalacha lamaisa. Okay, very good. Shabbos, Perek Yud, Mishnah Vav, 10:6, the last Mishnah of the Perek, and we'll discuss a hodgepodge of different halachas here. The basic structure of this Mishnah is that there are a number of things that Rabbi Eliezer is going to say is an Isser d'Oraisa, and the Chum will say no, all those things are just Aser because of a Shvus, meaning an Aser min d'Rabbanan. And here the Mishnah says, Hanotil tzipornav zu bazu. If a person clips his fingernails, I'll call it, but he uses one fingernail to tear away the other fingernail, that's why he cuts his fingernails. Obashinov, or he uses his teeth instead of his other fingernails. So the point is, that is not the normal way of doing it necessarily. The normal way would be with using like a tool, like a clippers, a nail clippers or the equivalent. But as we'll see in a moment, Rabbi Eliezer holds that is sufficiently normal, so that if one does it, he will be over the Isra d'Oraisa. And the malacha here we're talking about here is gozes, that's the av malacha. Gozes, you'll recall, is shearing sheep, etc., to obtain wool. And the idea there is the basic idea of gozes is every time you're removing material that grows from a living animal, like hair or fingernails, etc., so then that will be gozes. And Rabbi Eliezer holds that this is sufficiently normal to be chayev midorais, meaning chayev achatas for gozes. Now, you right away have to ask yourself the question, why would you be chayev midoraisa when it seems like it's a malacha shein tzricha legufa? That is to say, you'll recall, melech's machshavas requires that you're doing the malacha not just in the form the same way you did the malacha in the Mishkan, like cutting hair or nails, but also in substance you're achieving the same end, meaning it seems the substance of the goof, the essence of what you're doing when you're doing gozes, is obtaining hair for the sake of spinning it into wool. Here, you're not interested in obtaining the fingernails. You just want to clip them off. So that should be like a classic melacha she'ena tzricha l'gufa, the kind of same way that removing a dead body or from a home or trapping a dangerous animal, etc., is not a melacha that's tzorach l'gufa. It's rather ena tzricha l'gufa. However, and indeed, that's true. According to Tosfos, that is indeed the case. So if you didn't want the fingernails, it would indeed be just a derabanan, and it must be, according to Tosfos, where you would, let's say, want the fingernails or something like that, which is a little strange. But most Rishonim learn that indeed this would be a tzorach for the goof. Clipping your fingernails is potentially a malacha d'oraisa, even if you don't want the fingernails. And the reason why is because it seems that there was another malacha, and that was the malacha that was involved in removing the hair from the animal hides to prepare those hides to be part of the covering of the Mishkan. And as one obtained the hides from the Tachashim, etc., you would have to remove the hair from those pelts. And so, that being the case, beautifying the pelt is a tzorech, is an actual part of the substance of gozes. And that being the case, the same way removing hair is to make beautify the pelts as usable hides, so to removing hair from the face would be a way of beautifying the face, and clipping the fingernails is a way to beautify the fingers. And that being the case, would be tzorach l'guf, and therefore many Rishonim, or most Rishonim, learn that way, and that indeed this is a deraisa, because it's nothing to do with eno tzorach l'guf. Okay. V'chein, says Rabbi Eliezer, sa'aro, if you're cutting your hair, and you're ripping out with your, like ripping the hair out, as opposed to clipping it, or using teeth, etc. V'chein tzafamo, if it's your mustache, you're clipping a mustache by ripping the hair, or by using teeth, I guess. All those things, v'chein zakano, or your beard, all those things are sufficiently normal that according to Eliezer, one would be chayiv midorais and chayiv achatas. Okay. Other things, we're moving to other things besides gozes. V'chein hakocheles, a woman who uses essentially what we would call eyeliner around her eye. So, according to the Bar Tanura, Rabbi Eliezer holds that's an Isra Doraisa as a tolda of kosev, a ksiv of writing. The Shulchan Aruch goes with other mefarshim understand this would be an Isra of tzoveya, of dyeing, because it's your coloring the eye, the surface of the eye, like painting it. Indeed, so that's the halacha would follow that latter approach in truth. That the Mishnah Berurah Tzedek says it's Isra of tzoveya. The difference being that if you're writing according to the Mishnah Berurah, etc., and most, not like the Bar Tanura, if you're writing a symbol, a meaningful symbol, like a letter, that's kosev. If you're coloring the surface of something, that is going to be tzoveya, dying. So kocheles here, using eyeliner, is, according to Eliezer, already in Isra d'oraisa. V'chein haposekes. See, I'm sorry, I skipped. Darn it. V'chein hagodeles. I skipped, I'm sorry. Before kocheles is godeles. Godeles is braiding the hair. So he holds that braiding hair, really for etymological reasons, is considered to be kind of like building bone. You recall that building is taking disparate parts and combining them into one. So something like that is happening here too. You're taking disparate, parts of the hair and binding them to a single braid, a plait. So that is going to be considered to be, according to Eliezer, going to be deraisa of told of bone. And as for v'chein ha-pokeses, is separating the hair, like doing a part down the middle into two halves, like as girls, I say squirrels, school girls do, etc. So that would also be considered to be like building. It's kind of like the same idea, according to Rabbi Eliezer. So in all those cases, Rabbi Eliezer is mechayev, and the chachamim, osrim mishum sfos, the chachamim say all those things are only forbidden, midurabanan. In other words, they say when it comes to clipping fingernails, using your nails to clip your fingernails and tear away nails, or your teeth, and same goes with removing hair from your head, or your face, your beard, your mustache, all those are only a shinui, and therefore also only midurabanan. And as for the braiding, they say it's only midurabanan forbidden, as a like rabbinically like resembling building, same with parting the hair. As for using the eyeliner and the kocheles, again, really, since you're not really making a meaningful mark, you're not really dyeing the surface, you're just sort of whatever you're painting on with a fingernail, with a like a pen or whatever this equivalent, it's only resembling, and therefore it's only all these things are all the usar midirabanan. And the halacha is like the chachamim, meaning all these things are only usar midirabanan. They're usar across the board, but they're only usar midirabanan. The next part of the Mishnah is a new topic here. We're talking about hatolish me'atzitz nakuv. If one uproots a plant that's growing in a flower pot and the flower pot is perforated. So in general, the rule is when it comes to perforated flower pots, we consider them to be as if they're planted directly into the ground. So if you have your whatever, some wheat or your petunias, whatever it is, and you want to pull them out the ground and they're inside a flower pot with a hole in it, even if there's no roots going from the flower pot into the ground directly, since they could pass through there, and it's considered as if the flower pot's contents are nourishing from the ground beneath it. So therefore, your chayev, meaning your chayev achatas, is a deraisa. Visheinu nakuv, on the other hand, if the flower pot is not perforated, it's your pater, meaning you can't do it because it resembles the malacha. This is going to be a told of kotzer, of harvesting. But since it's not actually attached to the ground, it's only a midurabanan. Rabbi Shimon poter bezeh bezeh. Rabbi Shimon says in both cases you're exempt. Rabbi Shimon says across the board when it comes to things growing inside of flower pots, even if there's a hole in the flower pot, it's considered to be not longer attached to the ground. Therefore, you're totally iser derabanan. Fine. Halacha doesn't follow him. He would even agree, however, if you had a flower pot that was like buried into the ground, so it loses its status as a kli, it sort of butts to the ground, you would be chayev. And there's actually machlokos to Rashi Tosos about what containers need to have perforations, and whether it's if wood or like terracotta or earthenware flower pots need to have perforations, or if they're already considered to be tied to ground because of their porous. And the Mishnah Berurah brings that one has to be choshesh, that both kinds of containers, meaning a wooden or an earthenware container, even if it doesn't have holes in it, may indeed be considered perforated anyways, and you'd be over the Issur D'oraisa if you would, perhaps, if you would detach a plant that's growing inside such a flower pot.